Welcome to the Round 15 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by Bryce. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, gents. Thanks for having me along tonight for the therapy session. It's good to see you both.
Yeah, we've got CJ, who's joining us. First show of the season. He's featured over the years quite a few times, but first for the season. Welcome back, CJ.
First for the season, CJ. It feels like we've been interacting all year, so it's surprising, personally.
Active on the Twitter messages, not so active on the actual podcast.
It's good to have you on, mate. Why don't you kick us off and maybe also add how you've gone over the buys and whether you've considered it a win. I know that ranking-wise, you should probably feature a little bit more. You're doing pretty reasonable, mate.
I'm doing okay. Not as well as this time last year, but still feeling all right. I scored 16-11 for this week, which in the grand scheme of things, not too bad. But considering I had 18 playing, I thought was a little bit disappointing. My least favourite moment for Around the Grounds was Mitch Duncan, which he's managed to derail my season for a second year in a row. I don't have a never again list, but Mitch Duncan's getting pretty close to making it. Traded him last week, so he scored me about 85 points over 2 weeks and now requires a trade and lost me about 100K. So that's not good. Yeah. But on the plus side this week, I did bring in Lockie Neal, which feeling pretty smart about that one. I had a reasonable buy period, about 1,500 spots. So, you know, been doing okay all year, but yeah, not quite as well as you, Marcus. Just outside 1,500.
That is a very good rank. Can I say that being somebody who's ranked above?
Yeah, slightly above, yeah.
Bryce, how about you, mate? Do we have you on maybe the first round of the buys or something?
It's a fair while ago now. I think it was well before buys around the showdown, I think, on with Dunny.
Yeah, that's it.
So, yeah, I guess plan out my buy period pretty heavily with spreadsheets as far as trade-in, trade-outs. So I was all set up, ready to go until the West Coast Richmond game got moved. So that was a big hit for me. So I managed to re-navigate myself through using the two extra trades. I ended up with 17 for the last week. So I was scheduled to have 18. And then that dropped to like 14 or 15 pre my navigating. So I ended up with a score of 1546, so not great for 17 players, and that was largely due to the guys that I brought in. So the four trades that I made in round 14 netted me under 200 points. So I brought in Travis Pope, who had his lowest score for the year. I basically had 960-ish to get two premiums, so I really had to scrape the barrel. I remember sending through a few combinations through to you guys to get your thoughts. And pretty close to going Boak and Green, which would have been a reasonable result with Green, but I just couldn't bring myself to get Green with the injury risk and the suspension risks. And so I brought in Robbie Gray instead, and he gets injured. Thought that I'd go for a safer pick there, and it was kind of leading up to his 250th game, so the emotions were running high. We're about to sit down and watch with the family, and I asked my family, who should I trade in, Toby Green or Robbie Gray? And of course, they're going to say Robbie Gray. So I'm like, oh yeah, let's have a bit of fun with it and go with a safer pick who's not going to get injured. So yeah, that one really hurts. But on the plus side, it meant that I had to keep Impey. So that's one person I'll probably have to keep through the forward line now because I have to trade out Gray and waste a trade. So I have to keep him throughout. So as far as my ranking pre-buys, I was sitting about 3K, ended up going out to 4.3K and then ended up at 3.8K at the end of the buy period. So not a terrible result. Always try to make a bit more ground through the buys, but I guess set up reasonably for the second half of the season. So hopefully can make it a little bit more of a push towards 1K by the end of the year.
I think the lesson there is
don't ask your family for Supercoach advice.
Yeah, and don't let the emotion get into
Anyway. We will be cheering you on that your next trade target. You and CJ don't get hit by more injuries.
Can't afford anymore.
Yeah. I scored 1689, so I top scored for the week. The round rank was 5,582. Probably wasn't as happy with the team as I could have been, considering there were 18 playing, and I guess you had 18, but you had Duncan's 10. So there were some underperformers in the team. Hawkins, 58, Danaher, 57, Walsh, 71, Cripps in the 70s as well. He's exiting my team for Max Gawn this week, and I am so happy that's the last time Patrick Cripps is going to be in my team for a while, maybe.
Q 130 from Patrick Cripps this week. Maybe I'll bring him in. It's jumped into Patrick Cripps, locked and loaded.
So I've gone up to 1136th. No. For the overall season rank. That's a season high
very
for me.
Tidy.
I have 10 trades at the start of this round, which I think is more than most. And the team's looking pretty good. I traded in Aaron Hall for Isaac Heaney instead of bringing in Bontempelli the last round. And I'm happy that went with Hall. Luke McDonald came back and played on the wing. And I think they're the only team in the AFL where they've got their seventh defender rotating on the wing. So that was definitely a risk, and that's looking pretty good after 100 score. So I'm pretty happy there and looking forward to our full teams running for the second half of the season. It's always pretty exciting to see sort of your maximum top scores. We're now getting into the 2400 category, hopefully sort of regularly.
But welcome to the Aaron Hall Club, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Severely missed out. I think he's averaging 120 for the last six rounds now. So late, but at 530, he was still comparably cheap for what he's averaging. So we'll still take it. In terms of our Supercoach Coach group, our Patreon top scorer for the week was Clinton's team, Zach B. Nimble. So 1937 was his score, which is a huge round. He's ranked 655th after that score. So congratulations to him. And the leader overall for our Patreon group and in the running for our cash prize at the end of the season is Zach's team. Patton's Generals has retaken the lead with a score of 1871, unseating Travis's style and profile. And so it's been a very tight competition up the front there. And shout out to Fort Bondi, who scored 1756 and is only 80 points behind Zach. So very tight up there, and quite a few other people who are in and around that contention. So looking forward to cheering that one home. In terms of a top scorer on our main Supercoach Coach group, that's Daniel's team, COVID Can Gag F, which I think we know what that means. His overall rank is 42nd overall. Well done, mate. In 1988, obviously, he was already going pretty well before that. But good work to Daniel, some top scorers there. And the guy's 16th overall, Marks MRYP, also scored pretty well in the main Supercoach Coach group. So that's the shout-outs for the week. Well done, community. Let's get on to some questions. So interesting points in the season. Let's do a quick trade check. So I mentioned before 10, CJ.
I've got 6 this week for trades.
Bryce?
6 as well.
Okay, and you both are forced into a trade this week. Okay, so I think there are quite a few people in that particular boat, though, and that's good that we have you both on because everyone can't be in as luxurious a position as myself.
But it's not about the trades that are left. It's about the
It's about how you use it.
That's what I was going to say. But yeah, that's a good line.
All right, guys. Well, hopefully your 6 trades give you great bang for your buck. And there's a lot of people in the community who are facing similar challenges. So it's good to have that context in mind. A lot of the questions now are relation to completing your team if you don't have a lot of trades left, and the best way to navigate keeping an amount for injuries versus pushing your team. And for anybody new to listening to CJ, he's definitely going to recommend a more aggressive approach. We'll see how conservative you are, Bryce, in relation. But we'll start off with the question in the injury section. And this one's from Roland Chong on Facebook. He also has 6 trades left, and he needs to trade out Darcy Moore. So one of the unfortunate injuries this week. He's asking about a straight swap to Maynard, or should he be looking to burn a trade to get one of Mills and Lloyd? And I guess I want to pose you guys this question in relation to, you know, Mitch Duncan, who's dropped to 485, and Robbie Gray, who is also a bit of a value selection prior to the injury, and how you're planning to navigate that. Are you looking for a straight swap and taking more of a risk on the player that you bring in? Or are you looking to take more of a risk on your trade situation, downgrade to afford yourself the ideal target? Bryce, might kick off with yourself.
So I guess I've always been planning to come out of the bye period, or at least a couple of weeks after, with a fully upgraded team with a certain number of X long-term injury spare trades. And that number for me, the number that I felt comfortable with was 2. And that's probably a bit lower than previous years. I mean, ideally would like, so we've got 9 rounds left. I'd usually want about 4 for that 9-week period. This year, things are a bit different. It seems like we haven't generated as much cash. We've been hit with a bunch of injuries, at least we have, mere mortals, myself and CJ.
I thought you were going to balance me out with CJ, but we're fast and loose pretty quick here. All right.
Oh, yeah, it's loose this year. it's the only way. So that's what I'm aiming for, 2 trades left. For my particular case, with 4 trades, I can trade both Robbie Gray and a rookie to get Lachie Neale through some DPP. And then with my next 2 trades, I can get Dangerfield. So they're my 2 targets to complete my side. I'm happy with those 2 targets. I reckon that they're going to be great picks on the run home. And I'm happy to run the gauntlet with 2 trades. Ideally, probably 3. I'm probably a bit riskier this year just due to the situation, but that's how I'm approaching it. If the situation put you to 1 spare trade, probably be taking the value option there. How are you looking, CJ, as far as number of trades remaining after being fully upgraded?
He probably thinks 1 is fine.
Hey, look, really what you don't want is to have no trades after fully upgrading your team. But the only worst thing then is not having a fully upgraded team.
That is true.
So I think for me, I've got about 250K in the bank on top of my 6 trades, which that's really helps with that. I had actually planned everything out so I'd be able to go a luxury upgrade of Impey to Dangerfield this week. And then next week I was able to bring in Grundy, who I traded out, to finish my side. So having Duncan go out throws a bit of a spanner in the works there. For me, I'm still definitely tossing up whether I would rather do Mitch Duncan and a little bit of my kitty up to a decent midfielder. Probably not willing to spend up for Bontempelli. I think that's really going to come back to bite me, but there are some reasonable options in the 550 plus bracket. So I might look there, but I'm also thinking of just bringing in Patrick Dangerfield for Mitch Duncan this week. And then I will wait a couple of weeks and have a look at guys like Elliot Yeo and Scott Pendlebury and think about maybe bringing in one of those 2 to finish my midfield as a bit of a value option and let guys like Callum Coleman-Jones mature in value a little bit and kind of broach that gap. I think really when it comes to this time of the year, there's a big difference between playing a rookie on field this late versus early in the season, because all the good rookies are selected at the start of the year and generally have matured in cash and you've traded them out. If you're playing a guy like Bramble on field or hoping for a James Madden, like there's a big difference.
Even a Jai Newcomb. Yeah, what the hell happened there?
Like
the rookie scores you're getting at this time of the year are going to be much closer to 40 than 60, and that 20-point difference is a really, really big trade-off. And I think there are a lot of people who are like, should I spend an extra trade and get the extra premium, or should I just take a compromised option? Sometimes I think taking the compromised option is probably better if it means you're not going to be fielding a rookie in that last spot. Mm. If it comes down to 2 low-end premiums or 1 ultra-premium and 1 rookie, I'd take the 2 low-end premiums at this time of the year because the rookie scores are just absolute toilet.
Depends on how compromised those options are, I think. So I guess looking across the different positions, defenders, mids and forwards, I feel like the compromised options in the forward line seem very speculative. So I found it really difficult to actually find someone around the price point that I wanted last week and ended up with Robbie Gray. Green was probably the right choice there, but I feel like there's pretty good options at cheaper prices in the other line. So like the suggestion there, Maynard seems a pretty good option in the back line that could match close to one of the other 2s, and you use 1 less trade, which is going to be more valuable down the track. And then I think for the midfield, one of the players that I was looking at is Pendlebury this week. You know, he's got a low break even. That's one that's in my consideration set still in the plans last week, but things have just all been thrown out the window now. I like the look of Neale personally for the price. If you can get up to him, I think he's a really good buy. He has a 4-week period through the Supercoach finals where he plays all bottom sides. So if your league play, seems like a pretty good play, but also Brisbane Lions have a pretty good draw. So I'm attracted to him for a little bit extra cash over Pendlebury at this stage now.
The other budget option in the back line that I quite like is Dan Houston. Had another pretty reasonable game, I think is still in the low 400, so not a bad option. Or if you really want to go budget, you could roll the dice on Nick Haynes. Had a couple of good scores recently, looks to be getting his mojo back again, taking intercept marks, was obviously a premium last year. Probably pretty risky. would probably be trying to find a bit of extra cash and going to a guy like Houston, who I feel is a bit more reliable. But if you're really out of trades and out of cash, then I'd be much happier taking a guy like Nick Haynes if it means that you're not playing a rookie on field than trying to run the gauntlet of a Tom Highmore on field at D6.
I guess the only other point I'd make is the risk that comes with that compromise option when they bring an injury risk, because what could happen is you could bring them in, say like a Zach Williams last year was a little bit cheaper, and I'm sure there's plenty of examples this year. If you bring the guy in at a cheaper price and then you need to trade him out before the end of the season, well, you've used two trades there anyway, so you might be better off going for a more secure option with less injury risk and better scoring profile if you have the trades there to use. But yeah, we don't know how many we're going to need down the track, so it's a little bit difficult. You're making decisions under some future uncertainty. But yeah, I probably wouldn't at this stage bring in a compromise option that brings too much injury risk. But I think for the example here, which is in the question, as far as Maynard, he seems like a pretty good compromise option that doesn't have too much injury risk.
Yeah, definitely. I think I will challenge you a little bit on that, though. I think if you have to take an extra trade to get a guy who isn't an injury risk, you're guaranteed spending two trades on that upgrade, whereas you can bring in a guy with injury risk and there's a chance it only costs you one trade if the scoring potential is the same.
And if he's going to go up in price, I guess you might get that. Yeah,
I mean, it's a risky line, but yeah, often, you know, a guy like Nick Haynes, his break-even's quite low. There is a good chance that I think when you're in a compromised position, you have to make speculative picks. And sometimes taking a guy with injury risk who is, you know, 100K cheaper is probably better than burning a trade.
I mean, as a general rule, I think what is a safe amount of trades is one trade to have left every two rounds. So at this stage, you want four trades. Now, a lot of people are in situations where obviously they're making more extreme trade-offs. But in relation to Roland's question, I guess he hasn't really told us how many premiums that he has left to upgrade. So if he's in the situation where he's fully upgraded, then more to Maynard, it still probably makes sense because Maynard potentially is a value selection. But if you had the ability to get to Mills and Lloyd and you have decent bench cover and you're fully upgraded elsewhere, actually going for an absolute top of the top end. I mean, Mills has played 65% centre bounce attendances this year. That's second most behind only Luke Parker. You know, I really don't hate going the extra trade, going down to four left if you're completely fully upgraded elsewhere, especially considering their loose cannons going down to two trades.
Yeah, I'd do that in a heartbeat, down to four trades.
Yeah, so that's probably the way, and I guess to help people who are not in that exact situation, but to compute what that works out for you, you go one trade for every two rounds. How much does that leave you at left? And if you are in a negative territory, then a side swap is really all you can afford, and you're taking a risk on the player that you bring in. And if you have any more than that, then you can afford to go some of these higher up types. So that's probably where I'd go with that. Now, Josh Kelly's the other player that's been injured on the weekend, potentially. He's a bit sore in the ankle. It's a bit swollen. And apparently he is under a cloud for round 15, which is a pity considering the run that he's been over the last 7 to 8 weeks, especially since he's moved off the half forward line with Whitfield returning to the team. Just want to bring him up from the point of view of it sounds like he's still a chance for this week. So even if he misses just one, I think the equation is pretty simple with Kelly, and that's just hold on to him.
There's obviously a bit of, for the rest of the
season. GWS have been a lot better with their transparency on the injury list this year than in previous years. I have terrible flashbacks to Josh Kelly's 1 week injury spiraling into a 5 week injury a few years ago, but
then why was he on the half forward line?
don't even talk to him. I started him.
You still have him, CJ?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay, that's all right then. At least you can trade him out.
Yeah. No, I'm not that stupid.
Yeah, before we offend too many listeners, let's go on to the rookies.
Yeah, let's go to the next question.
Question here is from Chris Lund, one of our patrons. Who's the best downgrade option this week, minus Jai, Newcomb, and Ned Reeves, if they are named? I think as any rookie playing in their first couple of games now at this stage of the season, there's poor job security and a reason that they haven't played so far. So definitely ties into the conversations that we've been having so far. And he's listed three options here. So Edwards for West Coast, but there is the threat of A-grade quality midfielders coming in, Tim Kelly and Luke Chewy. Number two, Kieran Briggs, who Bryce has held for the whole year, first as a loophole and now is back in the team for the second game, on the bubble now, but can be ruined by money potentially coming back. And the third one, Bramble for Hawthorn. He scored okay, but Chris's point was he didn't notice him in the game at all. And he says, thanks for any insight so you can trade up to Lachie Neal. So definitely a worthwhile downgrade if you can get up to Lachie Neal. What do you reckon, Bryce? Where are you looking to toward rookie options?
That's exactly my trade this week, is to bring in Neal and to find a rookie downgrade to enable it. I don't have Reeves at the moment, so that's probably the difference. And I do have Newcomb, Briggs, and Bramble. So my option is Edwards or Reeves. I probably don't have too many strong opinions on rookies, but it's mainly around what it does to your structure. So my consideration is I already have Bramble and Newcomb in my midfield. If I was to bring in Edwards as well, it would mean I'll have three mid-only rookies on the bench, which removes any kind of DP flexibility that I have in my team, which isn't ideal. For my situation, I'm probably going to bring in someone like Reeves or a 102 ruck forward, probably Reeves at this stage. So that actually pushes one of my mid-forward rookies from my forward bench into my midfield to give me some kind of swing set. As far as the quality of those rookies listed, I think that Edwards seems like a pretty good option if he keeps his spot, but I think that there's a lot of threat from those returning mids. We don't need them to make money. I don't think that these are money makers, so it's all about cover for the rest of the season. Is Edwards going to hold his spot beyond when we might need him? That's probably the consideration for him. Yeah, Briggs has been identified as he's probably going to go back out for Mummy when he's ready. So it doesn't seem like he has great job security, but he has that DPP flexibility that you could use with someone like Madden if you still have him. And your Bramble, I touched on before, as far as mid-only and having too many mid-rookies in your team can remove your flexibility. What do you guys think about those rookie prospects?
Yeah, I really like what you said in terms of at this stage of the season, you're really looking positionally a little bit more in terms of the right mix that you have on each line and the cover. So if you're looking purely at the quality of the rookies, then I think from a job security standpoint, obviously the Hawthorn guys stand out a little bit more. I don't really hate Briggs' selection. I know it's only made his second game so far this year, but he's been in pretty decent form and they are now playing two rucks each game. So I think he will get a few on the run home. Edwards is probably one that will need to maintain the form to stay in. So he's potentially a little bit riskier, has a lot more challenges to keeping his spot as they head into the final series. And to your point, it's not about money making at this stage. So as much as Edwards looks great at this point, that certainly has to factor in. And so, yeah, positionally would be a great way to look at it. I'm personally deciding between either Edwards or Briggs this week. Briggs, for anyone with Madden, is obviously pretty tempting, and that's the situation I'm running with. It means that you only really need one of the two playing, and when you have cover for your premiums, you can pivot the two to hopefully get it in the right position. What do you reckon, CJ?
I think for me, if Reeves is named, I think it's pretty easy Reeves trade. Obviously, this doesn't help you, Chris, but yeah, Reeves, if he's named, I think, you know, he's got a reasonably good chance of getting games and provides cover on the line where you're least likely to have cover. I picked Bramble this week solely because I needed a body last week, and the difference for me between picking a 102k guy and a guy who's slightly more expensive, I was happy to take the punt on the guy's 102k. Hawthorn also play Saturday and Sunday in the next couple of games. They're definitely not primetime television, so I reckon they get relegated to a lot of later slots. So might not be the worst loophole player. Edwards is probably the guy I'm looking at picking this week, solely because he's played well and could potentially retain his spot. But if I had to rate them, I'd probably go Edwards 1, Bramble 2, Briggs 3.
If Durham from Essendon somehow makes it into the team this week, I think you'd also have to look at that pretty closely because
Yeah,
he has
a DPP and
102k.
That's
gotta love the
102k. Yeah, all about that.
Especially with Trent Bianco, he's at 170, so a lot of people aren't cashing him in. So if you have the flexibility of having Durham Bianco pivoting back and forth between your back line and with the interplay with Rory Laird, certainly a benefit there. Next question is about trade out candidates. This one's from David Bailey from Facebook. Impey versus Danaher, which would you keep at F6 versus which you trade out? Quite like this one because I think a lot of people are looking at those two that they've started with this season and going, you know, how long do I persist? And Impey's obviously had a reasonable win the last week, and Danaher had a bit of a loss. But going into last week, was Impey out, Danaher in? What do you reckon, Bryce? How would you rule there?
Good question. I was just looking at Danaher's last few scores. He seems to be slowing down a little bit, but Brisbane do have that good kind of fixture for the rest of the season, so he could be one that benefits from that. His break-even seems to be about 80 from what I see. Is that about right? So it doesn't look like he's going to lose a huge amount. If you're trading out one of those Impey Danaher types, I probably wouldn't want to go for a compromise forward option. I'd be wanting to get up to a Dangerfield or a premium option in the forward line. So if you can get up to one of them, I think it's a good choice. Has Impey turned it around? I mean, I think that he has been more consistent across the season. Danaher had a really hot patch there, but that's what key forwards are like. He might be just be having a little bit of a downward period, and then he might bounce back. If I needed to make a decision on both of them, not having owned Danaher but owned Impey, I'm probably favouring to hold Impey a little bit more, a little bit more consistent with his scoring. But I know, Marcus, you've had Danaher for most of the season. Do you still own him?
Yeah.
You might be...
I'd be biased in the other way, I reckon. Okay. Yeah, I haven't had Impey for a while.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
and I didn't pick Impey because I was worried about his role. I think Day going down, I've been on record as saying, is a bit of a godsend for Impey owners, and I think Day coming back seems to have impacted him. So I certainly have some confirmation bias around his potential to score moving forward relative to the competition he now has for that particular role. But he did get a lot of handball receives out of the back line this last weekend, which you would have been very happy to see. I think more than anything, it is more the handball receive part. I don't think he's looked like he's moved to the wing, which would certainly be a big concern and say cause me to really push for Danaher. The point is more, though, if you have two people to give the ball out to in the back line, will it be Will Day and CJ versus Impey now that Day is back? All it takes is a 10% decrease in his current scoring to stop him being in premium territory. Like 10% drop in opportunity in terms of handball receives doesn't seem like a big deal, but then in Supercoach point of view, it's a pretty big sort of disadvantage. So that's why I'd go Danaher. We expect the poor games once in a while, so I hope that'll be offset at some stage, but obviously some bias playing in there.
I'm unbiased because I own both, so yeah, I can be the tiebreaker here. I've been looking at trading on Impey for the last couple of weeks. I think he's had a little, it's not necessarily a role change, I think just a bit of a reshuffle. Like, I think Impey's been staying down a bit more. He hasn't been taking as many intercept marks. He took a few in the first quarter last week when he was the only person available to go fly, and he clunked them. I think that's a big contributor to his inflated score. Most of his scoring came in the first quarter, which looked pretty good, but he took quite a few intercepts. Danaher, I think the fact that he's been pinch hitting as a second ruck gives me a little bit of confidence that there's still a bit of free value there. I think that kind of offsets Impey's occasional kick-ins. There's more of a chance that Danaher goes on a little bit of a run or just spikes one 150, 160 score where he kicks a bag against a bad team that just pushes his average over Impey. So I think if I was trading one out, it would probably be Impey. But for me this week, I'm going to hold both of them because they both have a break even around 80.
Happy to keep both for the rest of the season if you're low on trades.
That's exactly.
Very happy with that relative to the options that you have in the forward line.
Yeah,
so I mean, if you could see another week of them, then you could make a decision based on that.
Yeah,
if
exactly.
you want to see Dangerfield drop or want to see some of the other options, just to get another data point and see if you have any more injuries that you need to deal with and then make an assessment.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I looked at their averages and MP's averaging 91 for the season and Danaher's 78. I thought it was actually a little bit closer than that. But yeah, MP did start pretty. He's a long way away from that, I think, as far as his role now.
All right, next question about trade-in targets. This one's from Grain-Fed Beef or at XFalconKnightX on Twitter. Neil, this week with the potential Geelong tag. What do you reckon about that, Bryce, as a guy who's been looking at Lachie Neil? I think O'Connor blanketed him a bit earlier in the season.
So a couple of things to think about with this one. The first point is that this trade-in is not about this single week coming. It's about the rest of the season. So if he has a down game in the kind of context of the rest of the season, doesn't make a huge impact. there's no guarantees that it will be a down game. Last time he played O'Connor, I think he was carrying a bit of an injury, and maybe he can work through that this time. The other comparison is, if you wait a week and get him next week, does that mean you're playing Jordan? And so you're comparing the score that Jordan will get and Neil will get this week. So who do you think will score more? I'd probably back the premium being tagged over Jordan, as good as he's been. I'd probably back Neil in that situation. And what happens if Neil actually gets off the chain, gets through the tag and scores well? He actually has a reasonably achievable break even.
94.
Is it about 94? So 94 seems pretty achievable, and you could be paying more the next week. So based on all of those, I mean, it depends if you have another option to go for this week. Maybe you're filling your forward line first, and then you'll complete your midfield next week. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. He probably shouldn't go out too much in price, and you get another data point to look at. But for me, I'm happy enough to bring him in this week despite the pending tag.
I think there's probably still question marks in terms of how he's going to score for the remainder of the year relative to people at 570K. There's still consideration that needs to be paid to the fact that he had an interrupted preseason and then he had an injury. It was an ankle, so it's not as though he could keep running on it during that return from injury. And what will that do to his scoring for the rest of the period? Considering I think this is probably his only second big game, although both big games were 150 plus. I guess if you were considering somebody in a similar price tag that you felt confident about, I don't think Neil is sort of hands down the only pick this week just because he's 570 and was at 700. But having said that, he's a pretty undeniable option in terms of potential upside to his current price point. And that means that more often than not, people will like to take the risk there. And you certainly would say that that's a worthwhile risk to be taking.
Yeah, I think the reasons to not pick Neil are not the Mark O'Connor tag potentially. Mm. Like, if you're confident in a player and you want them in your team, you shouldn't be concerned about whether or not they're going to get tagged. If the only reason you don't want to bring in Lachie Neil this way because you're concerned about an O'Connor tag, just bring in Lachie Neil.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's finish off with a captain's corner to wrap up the show.
I'll kick us off. I quite like Max Gawn on the Saturday. And then I don't hate going back to Josh Kelly, back to the well as the captain against Hawthorn, but I think I'll probably just take the safe option of Jack McRae against West Coast. So he'd probably Gawn into McRae for me. If I had Bontempelli, he'd be Gawn into Bontempelli, but alas and alack.
Yeah, I guess I'm probably interested in the Melbourne options again this week versus Essendon. So that seems like a pretty good matchup for both Gawn and Oliver. I've been a little bit underwhelmed with Gawn in recent weeks with the shared time with Jackson. Even though he has had a dominant matchup, he hasn't really scored tremendously well. I think he struggled against the Collingwood rookie ruck last good matchup he had. But he is Max Gawn. He's had a bit of a break, so maybe he comes out a bit refreshed against Essendon, so he could be a good option. Whatever option you pick is probably the wrong one. I do like the look of Jack Steele against Richmond on Friday night, so you could VC him into a backup of Oliver and Gawn. Thing we always say is Richmond give up points to midfielders.
Rory Laird really stands out. It's unfortunate he plays the last game of the round. His projection is reasonably high on the Supercoach Gold, and that's really off the back of his games against Carlton. Since 2015, five of his seven games against them have been 120+, with four of those being 130+. 136, 98, 120, 138, 72, 130, 132. So you're scoring 130s against them, even playing on half back. Max Gawn against Essendon, against Draper is obviously a good one. His last three, 121, 126, and 168. Tom Mitchell against GWS, his last three, 101, 181, and 130.
I just saw a nice little matchup come up. Might be a good backup option. Anyone playing Adelaide is a pretty good matchup, I can say, as a Crows supporter. So I'll be looking forward to seeing Sam Walsh running up against the Crows on a Sunday late game. So last one of the round, if you want to save a captain's choice to that game. So I'll be cheering for 23 players in that game, I think.
Very good.
All right. It's been fantastic to have you both on. Really good to have you on for your first show, CJ. all the best for the next round. Coming out of the byes now with a more completed team, it's going to be very interesting to see what the top scores look like on the run home and how we can make a bit of a dent in our overall rank. So thank you, gents.
Been a pleasure.
We'll catch you next week. See ya.
Ciao. See ya. Don't want this, get crazy. Don't want this, get crazy. Let's get crazy.